If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Pixel Sift is proudly supported by the Murdoch University School of Arts. Have you ever thought to yourself, I'd really love to learn how to make something creative like a game, a YouTube channel, or even report on the news? Well, you should have a look at what is on offer at Murdoch University. They'll give you all the skills you need to hit the awesome creative goals that you're aiming for. Keen to learn more? You can have a look at murdoch.edu.au/arts to find out what they've got on offer. That's murdoch.edu.au/arts, or you can just go search Murdoch University for more information. Murdoch University School of Arts proudly supporting Pixel Sift.
Pixel Sift.
Hello and welcome to Pixel Sift, the show dedicated to indie games from around Australia and the world. My name's Fiona, and tonight joining me is my co-host Mitch. How are you going today?
It's been forever since I've been on one of these.
It has.
I'm back.
You're back.
I'm not just relegated to playing games on stream. I'm now on one of these. And it's our first show as hosts.
It is. So we're very excited.
Yep.
And then also joining us this week is Matt Trabiani. He's the developer of an indie smash hit, Hacknet, and he's from South Australia's Team Fractal Alligator. He's back with a new local multiplayer game called Wrestle Dunk Sports. How are you going? Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
So, Mitch, what else are we talking about tonight?
Yeah, so if you were to name one of the very biggest franchise series in video games, you'd probably be hard-pressed to find one as big as Pokemon. But with that comes a lot of expectations from players who have been catching them all since they were babies. Well, there have been huge expectations around Pokemon Sword and Shield, and the fan base has basically gone to war against itself. We'll break it down for you if you manage to miss it.
Cool, all right, let's get started.
Australia's best video game podcast.
Subscribe to Pixel Sift on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever podcasts are found.
And if you don't think we're the best, prove us wrong.
So Pokemon is huge. Many of us grew up playing the series of games, and it's had a profound impact on so many people. For years and years, people have been wanting a home console version of the main Pokemon series, leading back as far as the Nintendo 64 era. Well, that dream is coming to reality tomorrow with the release of Pokemon Sword and Shield for the Nintendo Switch, the first mainline series game, excluding the recent remakes with Let's Go Eevee and Pikachu. And it's the first time it will be played on a big screen. But the problem with dreams is that they all often don't match up with the reality, and players' expectations have a huge... players expect a lot of huge things for the debut. And when the games don't meet their really high expectations, they often get quite upset and annoyed, and they mob the internet with their complaints. So we're going to explain the most recent internet controversy around the game that will absolutely completely sell out tomorrow.
Yeah, so it started off with the National Pokédex being removed. That means that older Pokémon will not be available, nor can they be imported. Less than half of the 800-plus Pokémon that used to be able to be found in the games. After a response from fans about the National Dex not being included and death threats to Game Freak employees, there has been a hashtag called Thank You Game Freak that trended, and individuals shared their own positive messages to Game Freak in light of morale reportedly being quite low amongst the developers of the game. Players have been criticizing the reuse of art and animations from previous games. Comparisons have been made and been drawn to older game models from the series. Players have been complaining that moves and abilities and features have been removed, including the global trade service. That's the online trading service where you would exchange Pokemon. And the global hashtag campaign has now come out in support of Game Freak. Yeah, that is the Thanks Game Freak. And it is pretty much against the other hashtag, Game Freak Lied, which is pretty much the accusatory.
Mm.
version of that. And I can't imagine it's fun to be a Game Freak developer at the moment. Matt, what are some of your thoughts on this whole situation?
I mean, I have so many thoughts on this. First of all, it's really hard to make video games. Video games are really big. They take a long time to make. And I don't know, I'm so upset, like, seeing the, you can't reuse an animation or a model. Like, you know how many Pokemon there are? I don't know. I gotta sort out my thoughts on this before you get me going too hard on it.
But it does seem...
Like, removing the national decks had to happen at some point, right? Like, they'd keep making more Pokemon. They can't have an infinite number of models in the game. Had to happen.
I think with the internet now, people now have more of an understanding about how games are created than ever. But still, they don't get exactly what it's like to be in those studios working on them. I remember a couple of years ago when Horizon Zero Dawn came out, there was a comparison made between a technique called frustum culling. And I apologize if I pronounced that wrong. It's where the game only renders what the character's looking at. It's essentially a big cone of vision goes around, and there was a very famous GIF. And when I saw that GIF, I was like, wow, that's amazing. I thought they were showing off render distance. Like, I thought that was always how games worked. And then, but then a lot of people misunderstood that and saying, oh, they're taking shortcuts. It's not rendering the whole game. And I was like, but I thought that's how every game worked. Yeah. I thought that makes total sense to me. Why would you bother rendering something behind you? And I took the GIF a little bit out of context because I thought all that was explaining was render distance.
With people learning more about like how games are made and how the whole process works from the internet, as you were saying, I think it makes them fall even harder into the Dunning-Kruger effect, where it means they overestimate how much they know about it a lot. Like exactly what you're talking about is actually, like, it's an amazing technical accomplishment what they're doing in that GIF. Like, it's very much the opposite of lazy, where, like, a game that looks that good couldn't possibly exist or run on any hardware if it wasn't doing that. Like, that's a technique that, because you never see it on your screen, it's a technique that lets them get away with doing so much more than they otherwise could. It's like, it's so clearly the opposite of lazy. It took a lot of work to implement that. It's much easier just to, like, throw the GPU a whole bunch of, like, you know, stuff to render and just be like, I'll render all of it. And, you know, I'll just put the stuff on the screen of whatever my camera's pointing at. Like, that's a lot easier than doing all of this, like, culling and, like, changing in, like, shadow density levels. And those are concessions that are made to make the game actually run. And people really, I think, with learning just a small amount more, have vastly overestimated how much they understand about the whole process. And it's just having terrible effects for game developers that are just trying to make good games.
People are talking a lot about the legacy of Pokemon, and part of the legacy are those 800 plus Pokemon that you could interact with and could be part of your team. And I think is the term of we're starting to move into a time where games now have these legacies, and I think how developers like address those legacies is going to become a big deal. And I think this is going to be part of the issue. I think Pokemon is probably going to set the standard now for the way developers deal with big legacies.
And I think one of the issues as well that came from the original, the beginning of them not including the national decks, it was said that one of the reasons why they decided to drop the national decks to help cull back, like we said, over 800 Pokemon, so they could have more time to focus on building the new models from scratch and things like that. And since then, people have actually gone into, have managed to actually find some data from either leaks or game part of the game that's come out, and they've actually found that they're just taking models from previous games and just porting that over. So that's part of the reason why there has also been such a big backlash, because they've said one thing, but according to people who have looked through data on the internet, it's found another thing, which I think where that Game Freak Lied hashtag came from.
Right.
Sorry, go on.
No, go on, Matt. You're all good.
I think that, like, a lot of people might missed all the details that are required in this. Like, they've got the whole Dynamax Gigantamax thing, which I'll talk about in a minute. I think the real issue here is how excellent Gigantamax Pikachu is. And I think more people should be talking about that. He's a good boy. But yeah, like, if you have the national decks, you got to understand that you'd have to make the Dynamax versions for all of them as well. And then the Gigantamax versions for all of them as well. It's not just like one model, one animation. You got to like have all these other models, all these other animations. You got to make sure they work with like all the different modes. And that sort of thing just really quickly becomes like unsustainable.
And then you also have all like the attack special effects for each different type of attack. And then all the sprite models too. It's just endless.
So, I mean, there's a huge amount of work involved. I think everyone knows, like, making games is hard. There's a lot to do. And I think, like, no one's played the game yet. It's kind of crazy.
That is the main sticking point for me. I kind of get the... I actually kind of understand the emotional place where people are coming from. Like, the Pokédex is not... Like, it's a big part of the game. Like, the tagline of the games is gotta catch them all. Like, and I kind of empathize with the idea that why people are like this, but I mean, the way people are going about it online is just make me want to go and pre-order the game out of spite, even though I don't have a Nintendo Switch.
I get it, but
do you think is actually representative of the actual player base?
Oh, absolutely not. No, like, this sort of thing is always a really loud minority. Like, I don't think many people, like, how many people play Pokemon? It's got to be a lot.
I play Pokemon.
It's like tens of millions, hundreds of millions, who knows? Lots of people play Pokemon.
People that don't consider themselves gamers play Pokemon.
Yeah, yeah, and Pokemon rules.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of those people, like, in like any statistical majority or statistically relevant amount really care. But yeah, like the morale thing's like very real. I think like even on a small scale, like a lot of people said really nice stuff about Hacknet, but it'd just like wash over me so quickly compared to like how much the bad stuff stuck with me. So I think a few really loud, really angry voices can do a lot of damage.
So thanks for watching Pixel Sift. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the new Pokemon Sword and Shield game and all the expectations placed on the game leading up to its release. So we actually have some tweets from people.
The tweets are a goldmine.
Both thanks Game Freak and Game Freak Lied. There was one, now Game Freak Lied is trending because contrary to what they said about making Pokemon Sword and Shield models from scratch, it's revealed they reused many 3DS models animations. This just keeps getting worse, doesn't it? And then we have a supportive one saying people really are out there like Pokemon just lost its magic to me after this generation. It's called growing up. Just Google it.
See, I don't like, even though that one is like, is supportive Game Freak, and I still think that's a real toxic way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like that response.
Yeah. I'm not worried about either of those.
Yeah. Those are the more civil tweets that we found about this topic. Not many that we could quote.
They put that Pikachu in this game. What do you have to complain about?
They put that sheep is dope. Yep. Wooloo.
I'm excited for Yampa, the little corgi dog. That's where it's at.
Yeah, so
should they put Great Grey Wolf Sylph directly from Dark Souls into a Pokemon? It's so good. And another one where the shield is its head? That doesn't make any sense. I love that one.
Yep.
I think there was a tweet which I think I forgot to include. It was like one of the best tweets, but it was like the names of the Pokemon games perfectly encompass the attitudes toward it. Like some people are defending it and some people are attacking it. So
yeah, I don't know. It's all a bit of a mess. To be honest, I've seen some of the like the screenshots people have taken of the environments that have been made public. They were like an clip from some video, and I'm like, yeah, that was in your promotional materials, and that looks pretty bad. I don't know. There's some of the ways they've designed the environments in the game. They've got some scenes which are really good, and other stuff that lets you get really close to it that I'm not wild about. I get it.
The thing is, I feel like Pokemon has never been known for its graphical fidelity.
Right.
Like, I mean,
right.
Like,
yeah. Pokemon, or its environments at
or
all.
Its environments. Like, this is all new stuff that people are complaining about. Like, Pokemon's never been
2D, like 2D pixels.
It used to be sprites.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I mean, that being said, they did just blow it so far out of the park with Breath of the Wild that everyone's
right.
like, why don't you do that for every game? And, like, they're different teams. Like, and, like, yeah, Breath of the Wild looks incredible and does run on the Switch and it all works. And, like, yeah, it would be sweet to have Pokemon in that. But, like, not everyone can do that.
Mm.
Like, it's pretty tough. So, like, I sympathize. And even though I'm in the same boat, I'm like, yeah, that would be that'd be pretty sweet. Like, I would really like that. It's you don't have to buy it. You don't have to buy it if you don't like it. Just that's I guess that's what I'd say. Like, it's fine if you don't like it. You just don't need to buy it.
Yeah, so I'm gonna correct before we jump into our next topic. I just gotta correct my quote. So it's from Dan Fornance on Twitter. So now I know why it's called Pokemon Sword and Shield. It's because half the internet is attacking it and half the internet is defending it.
Yeah, that's a pretty good tweet. I'd like that tweet.
Yeah.
And that's a good place to leave it. So why don't we jump right into the next topic?
You're listening to Pixel Sift. Or you might be watching Pixel Sift on Twitch. Pixel Sift.
So today we're joined by Matt Trobbiani from Team Fractal Alligator, and he's here to tell us all about their new game, WrestleDunk Sports. So for everyone not familiar, what is WrestleDunk Sports?
Cool. It's like a 2-8 player party game. It's coming out on Switch. It's pretty simple to get into. It's all designed to be like very approachable, like if you don't play games much or you like just want something that's like very easy to like jump into very quickly or just hand a controller to someone. There are four different sports, and they're all designed with that approachability in mind, but to also have like a real fighting game style, like level of depth and metagame to them. So a lot of work's gone into designing them to be like very pure and simple to pick up with like the minimum number of like buttons and things to learn, but to very quickly get you into like a competitive sort of mind game style, like match. So we got wrestling, we got fencing. We got volleyball and smash bowl. They're all like different sports, very quick to jump between them, like really good online stuff. And yeah, it's just supports like all the controllers, all 60 FPS all the time. And I really wanted when I was designing it to make something that was both very approachable and very like pure in its like satisfyingness, if that makes sense.
So how do you accomplish that in terms of game design? Like, how do you make it satisfying to play? Like that kind of feedback stuff.
Yeah, so that's like a massive task, and like there's a lot that goes into like finding out how to do that and executing it. Actually, like trying to answer that question really, really well was pretty much one of the main reasons I wanted to make this game, because like after Hacknet, which was not very traditionally mechanical. As a normal game, I really wanted to sort of master like game feel stuff. And this was sort of a study piece on that. And I don't know, I'm thinking of doing like a GDC or a GCAP talk on like all the stuff I learned on trying to make it feel good. But there are a couple of fundamentals that I really wanted to focus on. The first was having all of the buttons. When you press a button, it does something snappy and gives you feedback on it. Immediately, like on frame, and making sure all of your inputs go in like on frame, like as quickly as you can possibly get that data into a computer, and have it like within that same 16 milliseconds show up on the screen. So stuff like that to make it snappy, a lot of focus on how the camera moves. WrestleDunk's kind of like fixed camera side on, but there's so much camera movement even in that. A lot of it's very subtle. There's a lot of work that went into like camera shakes and like the particle effects. Other like details, like there's so much to this and you need to go like down in details and really get into like how it works. A lot of the satisfying feel is making it so that players never feel like they put an input in and it did nothing. So there's always a response to all inputs. All inputs, like if you swing to hit a ball in volleyball, That actually gives you your hitbox actually extends well into your body, so you can actually swing late. But you can also swing early, where after pressing the button, you have like a handful of frames. I think it's like 3 or 4 frames, where if the ball has come into range to hit it, then the game will act as if you hit it that 5 frames later. So it'll still work for like it essentially gives you a little window where if you try and do something, you'll pretty much always do it, which makes the controls much more expressive of intent rather than like just mechanical precision. And that's really about trying to make it so that the game is more about the decisions you make. Like you outplay someone because you outthought their move, not because they pressed the button and their button worked and yours didn't.
That always amazes me.
I mean, I could talk about game.
Yeah, I was going to say that always amazes me, like listening, like talking to you about like all the thought and the process that you put into just the really, really finer details. Was that really difficult trying to get it? So like you were saying that as soon as they press a button, there's an immediate reaction on screen. And so it's like an immediate thing.
It's complicated to answer that. I mean, the short answer is yes. But the real answer is like, it's not difficult to do that. If you just like start up a new game project, you can make that happen very easily. The difficulty is in keeping it throughout the entire development process, like never compromising on it. Because there are like some effects that you can add that like make all of your stuff render a frame late. Or if you write your input system in a certain way, you can make it so that your button effects, like your actual input doesn't come in until the frame after, which is like what happens in some networking stuff. Some of your particle effects, if they don't have like an effect that pre-warm, like a smaller effect that spikes out first and then the main effect plays like behind it, when you press the button, the effect won't actually be visible because it'll be like behind the player, and then it'll only be visible a couple of frames later. It's hard to just not lose it and to keep your focus on it throughout the duration of making a whole like shippable game. But it's not that hard to do it in the first place, so it's kind of weird.
Now, you were also selected, your game was also selected this year at PAX's Indie Showcase section. What was it like being one of the selected games?
So it was pretty special to me this year. I've actually been there before. Hacknet, my last game, was selected into the PAX Showcase.
Because you were also a secret, weren't you?
Yeah. The reason I was a secret, my marketing materials just weren't done in time. So I was like, oh, just make it a secret. Don't tell anyone. So it was really special to me this year. So it's kind of a long answer to this, but when I'm in development, I assume this happens to everyone and nobody talks about it, but this definitely happens to me, that I go like up and down on how I feel about a project like all the time. And usually it's over the course of like a couple of weeks where like, I don't know, 1 week of a month, I'll be like, I'm the greatest game developer of all time. This game is going to make $1 trillion and everyone's going to love it. It's the best. And then like 2 weeks will go by and then I'll have a week where I'm like, this is trash and I should throw it all away and work on something else. I'm wasting my time. And like, it has no attachment to the actual quality of the game. It's just, you lose lucidity so hard that you have no idea what you're working on, and you just go up and down how well you think it's going to do, how good you think the game is. It's hard to, you know, really have like a good objective view on the quality of what you're making. And I feel like as the pressure rises, or you get closer to deadlines, that period collapses and it gets shorter and shorter, so that you might feel like good about it at the start of the day and terrible about it at the end. I don't know, it's been very challenging trying to follow up Hacknet with something. And WrestleDunk's such a huge departure that, like the Pokemon controversy, right, on a much smaller scale, obviously. Like, there are a lot of people that really like that game and are really excited to see something else like it that I'd make, and I didn't want to let them down by, you know, making something that's so deliberately unlike it, but that was the choice that I made, so I was worried. And there was a bit of that coming into the announcement of what I was working on. And I was also in like a bit of a low on the project where I knew the deadline where I needed to announce it was coming up, but I just wasn't feeling that good about it. And like, not because the game was bad, but just because I was in like one of the lows. I was just feeling a bit lost on the whole project. And when I was just like right at that moment, I got the news that I was in the showcase again. And getting that news for the first time with Hacknet was, I think, like a really big turning point in my like life and my career, and was a really big sign of great things to come. And to have the same, I guess, like honor again in my next game, especially one that I was like feeling so shaky about, was really important to me. So yeah, being in the showcase this year was particularly good.
So thanks for watching Pixel Sif. If you just joined, we're talking to Matt Trobiani from South Australia's Team Fractal Alligator about their new local multiplayer game, WrestleDunk Sports.
Online 2,
there we are. Now, you mentioned Hacknet a bit just before, and that was a single-player narrative experience, which was very, very successful. How does it feel to be working on this game now?
Like, really scary. It's complicated. I really love Hacknet, and I'm super proud of what I did with that game. But I feel like I was stagnating a bit as a designer. And I was worried that if I made like another Hacknet-y game, I'd never get good at these things that I really wanted to be good at, which was all the game feel stuff that I was talking about before. Because I want to make like other games too. I feel like I have like more to do. I also feel like making another game like Hacknet wasn't something I could do. I was really burnt out on it. So I needed something super different. And I decided on this because of like a whole bunch of reasons. And but now it's like, it's kind of scary because it is so different. And I think it's like, I was so lucky to do as well as I did with Hacknet. But the number of indie devs that I know of that have just picked a totally wildly different genre and style and everything and found success again is like very small. So I don't know. I'm trying my best.
We got some questions from the chat. So this one's from Spider Bemb.
Spider's the moderator in the Hacknet Discord.
Oh, nice.
Extremely cool and nice. How's it going, Spider?
Welcome to the chat. So they asked, can we expect a story mode in WrestleDunk?
You cannot.
And
I like, I want it to be very, very focused in how I design this game. I try to be very focused in all my games. Like, I don't want to make something that's got like, oh, it's got like a every kind of mode and it suits every kind of player. No, like this game is very specifically just for this one case. And I'm trying to be very good at solving that one problem. And I'm not going to try doing anything else. So no single player.
And Spider Bemd, sorry, I'm pronouncing that name. But
just call him Spider.
Spider. Can we also customize little rectangle characters?
Oh, yeah, you can.
Oh, nice.
Got a little outfit button. You can change the colors and you can change what they're wearing. Sorry, I just bumped my mic. You change what they're wearing. There's a little button in the lobby. You can press your little bumpers. I'm not sure how I'm going to handle it yet. Maybe you can like unlock new outfit sets by playing a bunch. Maybe they'll all be there at the start. I don't know. There's a bunch of funny ones there. I've just asked my artist to do a whole like formal wear series and a bunch of like tuxedos and stuff.
While you're at it, can you do a Pixel Sif shirt?
If you've got any ideas, just tweet them at me. I'll include them. It'll be good.
Can you do a Pixel Sif shirt?
Maybe. I'll think about it. Yeah, it's I'm trying to make them all symmetrical because I flip them around a lot. But I'll have to think
about
it.
That's a good point.
Just make them yellow. We'll just pretend it's Pixel Sif.
Yeah, just make them yellow. Yeah.
Maybe I should make like, if you enter like a little passcode on the controller, you can get like secret ones, and I'll give them to like streamers and stuff.
Oh my god!
And you could have your little, and then you could tell them, you could unlock the shirt. Of like, oh, all right, hold on. Somebody write that down. Send it to me.
Yeah, we'll write it down. Or you can just listen to the episode.
Yeah, that sounds fun. All right. I thought of it here. If I do that, I'll do the Pixel Sif one. It'll be good. Yeah, maybe. That'll be fun.
So there are a lot of the kind of couch co-op online multiplayer games on the market right now. What have you done particularly to WrestleDunk to make it stand out?
So that's like a really big and really hard problem. And a lot of my approach to entering the market like that is like built on like two things. So one, you need like a big angle to get like in on it, and like just an angle into the market. And mine's going to be just that it's like sort of like the pack of four games, and they're all going to have like very good game feel and like very complete polish. So I'm going to go in with the four games angle, and then past that, I just want to make sure that I get all of the fundamentals really good and really right. So just like day one, excellent multiplayer support, all controller support, like fully localized into everywhere it's going to need to go, like all 60 FPS all the time, all the games actually being like good and polished and like fun with a variety of numbers of players, and then just doing the marketing properly. I think those are like fundamentals, which you can put kind of separately to your like gimmicks. And my one gimmick I wanted to do was just make it a pack of four smaller, more like tightly designed games that all have their own appeal. So I'm not just like, it's not just, and they all have like different maps and things. So I've got like proper like variety in the screenshots and all that sort of thing. But the big like gimmick angle is going to be the pack of four. I don't like games that get like too gimmicky. Yeah, so very strong fundamentals coming into the market as pack of four games. And then we've got some like marketing tricks up our sleeve to get it going. But past that, it's just going to ride off of how good the games actually end up being.
Would you potentially include more little games like further on, depending on what the reception is towards them?
Yeah, totally. So it's possible. I don't want to make any plans that too detailed. Like there are some games that I'd like to make, and like if the game does really well, and like I decide to do it like a DLC or something, it'd be fun to do a whole pack of top-down sports. But that'd require a big rework of the characters to work top-down as well, right? But I think handling like post-launch stuff, it's tricky. I think. My strategy is that I just want to listen to the players. And I'll have a Discord and stuff and just be like playing with people and talking with people. I kind of want to do once it releases, just a developer plays like once every fortnight or something. And just have it so that I'll just be joining like random queues and just like hopping into people's sections, and you can play a bunch of games against the developers, and that's where I'll talk to the community and have like a big connection like Discord or something. That sort of thing would be good. So my like post-launch plan about how to grow the game and like if to add more sports or how to rebalance or anything like that is just going to be based on like listening to the community and like growing it based on that, not making too many assumptions beforehand. Like right now, I'm just planning on making the game like a complete package when it ships. Like it won't be missing anything. I'm not like planning anything and holding it back for later. Like I'm just trying to make it as complete and whole as it is now, and then just listen to the community to grow it after launch.
Has the game been designed with expansion in mind?
Not really. Like the code base is for sure, but I think that's sort of how you should code anything, where it would be pretty easy to like add new sports. Like the multiplayer code is sport independent. So it shouldn't be too bad to add new sports later if I decide to. But there's nothing like missing from the experience.
Now we have another question from Spider in the chat, and he said, besides coming out on Nintendo Switch, in the future, can the game be expected on any other platforms like PlayStation, Xbox, and PC?
I really want to. None of them are confirmed yet, but it's pretty likely that it'll at least be on PC and hopefully Xbox and PlayStation later. But I'm not 100% sure, so don't hold to it too strictly. Well, I think the natural home for the game is on the Switch, though.
And I'm very excited that it's coming to the Switch, because it means I can sit down and play with my friends, because they all have Switches as well.
Yeah, it's so good. I really want to get the weird local Bluetooth thing where you connect all of your Switches together. Do you do that? Does anyone do that?
I have not done that. We just connect the controllers to one Switch.
Yeah. Okay, good. Because it's a real hassle to get that going. But that would be neat, too. I'm not sure. That's what they do in all the ads. It looks like a good time. definitely having it work with like all the controllers and like in that way, I think is just so good. And that's like how I want to design the game first. And I'll do ports later. But I want to have like really nice HD rumble. HD rumble is the best feature ever. It's so good. You know, you can like, they've got a tool that lets you turn sounds into rumble, and it like rumble matches the waveform of the sounds. It's wild.
Now that's really cool. I do appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, I'm just going to like put in all the sound effects and make rumbles to all the sound effects and then just tune them from there. It's going to be good.
You should try and do some sound effects so it makes a code and then that code unlocks a new outfit.
That's some deeply very obscure stuff you're talking about. I don't know how to feel about it. Oh, consider it.
Well,
unlocking weird outfits is good, though.
That is a good one. Now, if you're keen to check out WrestleDunk Sports, you can find it on the website WrestleDunk.com, or you can go to Twitter at WrestleDunk Game or follow Matt on Twitter. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it, but it's spelled
I just read it out. I don't know. It was my old Warcraft name. There you go. Now you know where it comes from. It's O-R-A-N-N, Oren.
There you are. But thank you so much, Matt, for joining us this afternoon, telling us all about your game. It's really exciting. I can't wait to play it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
That's right. And well, that's all about we have time for today. So thank you for watching or listening to episode 135 of Pixel Sift. Now, this show has been hosted by myself and Mitch. Thanks for joining me again tonight, Mitch.
Not a problem. Been a pleasure.
And Pixel Sift is produced by Scott Quigg, Sarah Ireland, Fiona Bartholomeus, Mitch Lowe, and Gianni DiGiovanni is our executive producer. And we wouldn't have been able to make 135 episodes of Pixel Sift if we didn't have the support of Murdoch University. So go and check them out and tell them that we sent you. And then if you're keen to learn more about a great creative degree, you can go to murdoch.edu.au/arts. That again was murdoch.edu.au/arts. And then as always, we'll be sticking links to topics we talked about in the show notes on our website, www.pixelsift.com.au.
And you can also come join us on Discord if you have that. It's available at pixelsift.com.au/Discord, where you can share your creative work, talk about the topics and the games we've covered on the show and everything else. That's pixelsift.com.au/Discord. And if you like what we do, can I ask a favor? We need your help to share the show and tell a friend and subscribe your brothers and sisters to the show just on anything they have. It's available on all your favorite podcast services. And start someone's journey into podcasts, because we know that getting started is tricky. But once you're in, you'll love it.
Now, our next episode will be on the 28th of November, but if you join us this time next week on the 21st, it will be Pixel Sift Plays, where we play some of the indie games that feature on our show. Like I said, that's all for this week. Thank you for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.
See ya.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator Hironobu Sakaguchi made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. At sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.